Welcome to Multifamily AP 360, the show where we discuss 360-degree views on mindset, passive, and active multifamily investment. If you're looking for tips and strategies, or just want to learn from the experiences of others, both good and bad, then listen on. This is Multifamily AP 360 with your host, Ramakrishna Chinchu.
And today's our guest is Ashley Tyson from OG Pros. Welcome, Ashley.
Rama, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. Super stoked to be talking to your audience about, you know, about my passion, which is opportunity zones, and excited to be here today.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And a little bit about Ashley is like, you know, attorney, professional speaker, and the founder of OG Pros, a full service opportunity zone advisory firm. Ashley has worked in real estate, mergers and acquisitions, business growth, and management. He brings his breadth of experience in all of these areas to help educate and guide investors to navigate in opportunity zones. So with that, Ashley, you want to add anything to your background?
Well, I like to call myself a reformed attorney. You know, I got sick of practicing because I wanted to get in the game. And so I sold my M&A firm back in 2017 to help business owners put more money in their pocket, because it's not about what you make, it's about what you keep. And I'm a firm believer that it is our civic duty as Americans to pay as little tax as possible. And so I set about building a company to do exactly that. But it was amazing because I was doing this succession planning and we had all these tax strategies and that kind of thing. But nobody wants to talk about succession planning, because I guess they're thinking about that means when they die. And so I was at a CLE, and there was this guy up there talking about the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And he started talking about its three pages that got snuck into it. And I was like, I ran him down afterwards. And I was like, man, that sounds like 1031 and private equity got married. And he had this like this droning voice, and he's like, yeah, and they had this beautiful baby named Opportunity Zones. And so I was like, oh, man, I'm in. And so I ran inside and started taking down domain names, because that was my background. Started at Big Law. I left Big Law to go and be a tenant in common syndicator. And we distributed real estate securities projects through RIAs and broker dealers. And so then when the commercial real estate crisis happened, I went back to practicing law and did M&A for 10 years. And all these people do roll-ups and startups and that kind of thing, and acquisitions and moving businesses around. And I was like, holy cow, inside of opportunity zones, you can use the benefits of like a 1031 exchange of deferring, but then you could put it into both real estate and operating businesses. And oh, hey, by the way, this isn't just a tax deferral strategy. This is a tax elimination strategy. So I was like, all right, I'm all in. And that was in May of 2018. And I literally have been eating, breathing, and sleeping opportunity zones ever since.
Awesome. Thank you for the introduction and why you started, you know, why you selected opportunity zones. I appreciate it. So can you provide a brief overview of what opportunity zones are and how they function within the context of real estate investments?
Sure. So they were created by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And what they were specifically designed to do was to incentivize private capital to invest into areas that had historically been underinvested into. And so the way that they did that is the Congress said, hey, governors, you can designate up to 25% of your low-income census tracts as opportunity zones. And hey, private investor, if you have any kind of capital gains, if you execute that capital gain and you put it into a qualified opportunity fund, which is fairly simple, it can literally just be an LLC taxed as a partnership, and then you keep your investment. So number one, when you put your money into that fund, you're going to defer your taxes until December 31st, 2026. Number two, if you get it in for 7 years prior to 2026, we're going to give you a 15% discount on your taxes. If you're in 5 years prior to 2026, we're going to give you a 10% discount. And then if you hold your investment for 10 years, we're going to make it so that that new investment gets a step up in basis to fair market value. And that's really significant, because it not only eliminates capital gains taxes, but it also eliminates depreciation recapture. And so that's the power of opportunity zones. Now, those that second benefit of the reduction, that was tied to that date of 2026. And so you had to invest before 2019 or 2021 in order to get that, which is why I get a lot of feedback like, oh, aren't opportunity zones, didn't those go away? No, just that second benefit. And that second benefit's a rounding error when you compare it to this unbelievable tax forgiveness on the back end. And so I talk to people all the time. I'm like, okay, so inside of my real estate investing, while on the side of being a lawyer, I started investing into mobile home parks. And I had a really good one here in Charlotte. And I was looking at expanding that park. And I was looking at the brain damage associated with it. I had an offer on the table. There was a really good offer. And I was like, okay, should I go and make this offer even better and build value in this? Or should I take that capital gain off the table now, set up my own fund, and then go do the same amount of time and energy on another deal just inside of an opportunity zone and make 24% more? I wonder which deal I'm going to do. And so that's kind of what started us on this journey. We started a fund and now we set up qualified opportunity funds and qualified opportunity zone businesses for people specifically to do just that, to take advantage of this, what I think is the greatest tax legislation ever created, in order to build generational wealth for them and their families.
Awesome. So what asset classes comes under, or we can, target under opportunity zones?
So you could pretty much do any asset class, right? As long as it is able to be located actually in the confines of the census tract of an opportunity zone. So, I mean, we've done hospitality deals. We've done multifamily deals. We've done single family rentals. We've done short-term rentals. We've done mobile home parks. We've done RV parks. We've done glamping. It's kind of the sky's the limit relative to what it is. Now, what you can't do, you can't have a sin business. So you can't have a golf course or a hot tub facility or a tanning salon or a massage parlor or anything that sells alcohol for off-premises consumption. So it kind of takes like convenience stores off the table. But pretty much anything other than that, you can do. And so it's funny is that people are like, well, what about strip clubs? Or what about marijuana facilities? I'm like, nope. That's not a sin business. As long as it's recognized by the federal government as a trade or business, you can do it. Now, I wouldn't advise anybody to do a strip club, but hey, lots of people like to do.
Awesome. Thank you. Good to know that. Yeah. So why qualified opportunity zones represent a quintessential edge against uncertain tax rates?
Hedge against increases in tax rates. So I love it because you're pulling it from stuff that I've said in the past, right? So I think that OZs are the quintessential hedge. So you get to execute your existing capital gain. Now you're going to pay taxes in 2026. The question is whether they'll go up between now and then. But even if they do, that's going to be a finite amount. Whatever your new investment is, after you've held that for 10 years, capital gains go away. And so it is the quintessential hedge against it, because who cares what capital gains tax rates are, because you're not paying any. And so that's why I love opportunity zones, because it literally takes it off the table. Oh, and hey, by the way, it also takes off the table that you're going to pay income rates on the depreciation recapture that's going to happen. And it completely eliminates that risk as well. And I know your listeners are super savvy and they're all over bonus depreciation and taking cost segregation studies in order to minimize their tax burden along the way. And in a typical opportunity zone deal, you usually have enough bonus depreciation to wash the income all the way up until you've held it until, you know, for a 10-year hold. Now, if you hold it past 10 years, you're probably not going to have enough, but if it's a 10-year hold, you usually have enough to offset that income along the way, or at the very least, make a substantial dent in it.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you. So in our experience, can you share examples of successful real estate projects in opportunity zones that have positively contributed to community development? How do you measure the impact?
Yeah. So there's lots of talk about this, and there's currently legislation pending that would extend the Opportunity Zone program, which we'd love to see. And then it would also pick up some impact reporting where people would actually have to measure the impact that they're having in the zone. And the obvious answer is that there's positive economic impact that's happening. And my economy teacher used to tell a story about a guy that went to a hotel and he said, "Hey, I want one of your rooms, but I want to see it first." The guy's like, "No, you can't see the room." So he's like, "Well, I'll give you the rate of the room just so I could see it." So the guy gives him $100 and then he goes to the room. The hotelier then says, "Oh, the butcher, $100 next door." And so he runs to the butcher and he gives him $100. And then the butcher's like, "Oh man, I owe the dry cleaner $100. And so that happens six times, right? And then the sixth person is the shoe store guy. And he's like, "Oh, I owe the hotel guy $100 for when my brother-in-law came in and I didn't want him to stay with me." So he goes in and he hands the hotel guy $100. And then I come walking down the stairs and I'm like, I didn't really like the room. I want my $100 back. And the guy goes, "Oh, here you go. Gives me my $100 back." How much economic impact has happened in that illustration? $600. And I still got my money back, right? And so that's the power of people building inside of opportunity zones. And it's amazing to see what's happening inside of opportunity zones as a result of them just being designated opportunity zones. Permits are up, the house values are up. And the really cool thing is that it's drawn the attention of folks who do want to do socially impactful projects. So to answer your specific question is that we helped a gentleman that had this defunct development, the Velada developments back in 2008. They were doing a waterfront development on a lake down in Alabama, and they had literally like a stub farm, right, where they put the infrastructure in and then it just went, the financing dried up and so it went dead. And literally that thing had sat until 2018 when he came in with Opportunity Zone money. He bought the property and he's turning it into a village for autistic people, right? Autistic kids and autistic adults, and mainly autistic adults. And so they've got multifamily residences and apartments and stuff like that. And they've got all the services there. And then next to that, he's actually got a working farm where he's harvesting chickpeas, right? Or chickweed from a lake. And so he provides them with a job because they're either working in the dining hall or they're working in the farm. And so it's an amazing community that he's built here. And he was able to do that because of the power of the tax mitigation program inside of Opportunity Zones. So instead of him having to go and ask for eliminatory dollars or grant money, he was actually able to go get investors that would get behind this because they saw what the power was going to be over the 10 years that it was going to take to build this thing. And I've got example and example and example of projects just like that. We got another gentleman that's doing kind of a retreat concept that's out in the, it's kind of out in the boonies. And it would have been very difficult to have done that without the power of the opportunity zones. So it's limitless. Bamboo farms, regular farms, beef farms, tree farms. It's amazing what people are doing inside of opportunity zones. In addition to the operating businesses that people are either starting or buying and moving to opportunity zones, because it's not just limited to real estate. You can actually do operating businesses as well.
Awesome. That's a powerful example, you know, how these investors, you know, social impacting, you know, using opportunity zones. Awesome. And what challenges and risks do investors typically face when operating within opportunity zones? And how do you navigate these complexities to ensure a successful investment?
So it's really interesting. And I've got this, you know, opportunity zones on a page, and I call it the opportunity zone cheat sheet. And it's actually available on a special landing page that we created just for you. And it's ozpros.com/Rama, R-A-M-A. And you can download the cheat sheet. And on that cheat sheet, it literally is opportunity zones on a page. So the program can't be that complicated if I can reduce it to a visual that's on one page. But inside of that, there are things that you have to pay attention to. There's deadlines and there's testing guidelines that you have to really dive into and that are fairly nuanced. And so if you're not really dialed into the specifics of that. And you got to pull some from some other areas of the tax code in order to figure out some of those nuanced questions. You can make footfalls, and the footfalls can be expensive. And so I think that that's probably the biggest challenge. And the way that you overcome that challenge is surrounding yourself with professionals that know what they're doing in the space. So make sure that your accountant knows about opportunity zones. Make sure that your lawyer knows about opportunity zones. If you're doing an offering, make sure that you have risk factors specifically for opportunity zones. And then if you folks don't, we've got the experts, we've got the OZ pros that do. So we've got lawyers, we've got accountants, we've got cost segregation experts, we've got the folks assembled as a team that if anybody wants to either talk about opportunity zones, learn more about them, or actually execute them, we can absolutely make that happen.
Awesome. Thank you. And how do you conduct due diligence when considering a real estate investment in an opportunity zone? So what key factors do you prioritize during this process?
Yeah. So if I'm talking to a sponsor who's doing a deal inside of a OZ, I start asking them specific questions relative to opportunity zone specific stuff. So I want to know what their substantial improvement amount is. And if they kind of look at me blankly, then I'm like, all right, these guys don't know anything about opportunity zones. And so then if they do, then I'm going to ask them how they came about that number. Did they do an appraisal? Did they extrapolate from tax value? And I'm going to ask those specific OZ questions relative to that. I'm also going to ask them about their organizational structure of how they've structured the equity and effectively the cap table inside of their deal. Is it done correctly in order to preserve opportunity zone status? And inside of that, do I have to come into their qualified opportunity fund, or can I use my qualified opportunity fund and go directly into their qualified opportunity zone business? And that two-tiered structure allows for a lot of flexibility, but it also is necessary that they know their stuff relative to how they've structured that. And if there's any kind of question around that, that's going to be a red flag for me. And then I'm going to jump into the details of the deal. I'm going to underwrite it relative to just the pure economics, because opportunity zones will ice a cake, but they don't make a bad cake taste good, right? And so the underlying deal needs to stand on its own merits, and you can't let the tax tail wag the dog. And so it needs to be not a flea-ridden scoundrel of a dog. It needs to be a dog that's going to hunt. And then we're going to put some bells and whistles on it in order to make it hunt real well.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I went through like all kinds of like allegories and examples and that kind of thing there.
So any best practices to set up and leverage opportunity zones operating businesses?
Yeah. So, I mean, the key thing is to just get it going, right? So start now, because it's all about when you get your capital gain into the qualified opportunity fund. That is the crucial start date. That starts your 10-year hold. And then after that date, every capital asset that your qualified opportunity fund owns is going to be eligible for that step up in basis to fair market value. So it's not how long you've held the asset. So you don't need to have a deal ready to roll right now. All you need is a capital gain. Get that capital gain into the fund. And then as long as you keep that capital gain amount around 10% of your aggregate project costs, you're going to be fine. And so you could bring other money to the table. You could bring leverage from a bank into the mix, and you're going to be able to take that capital gain, lever it up into your real estate deals or an operating business, expand the business that you've already got, start a new one. And then all of the growth of that new investment is going to come out tax-free on the back end. But that's the key thing. Let's get it going. There's an old Chinese proverb. When was the best time to have planted a tree? People ask me that all the time. When was the best time to start an opportunity zone? Well, back in 2018 when they passed the legislation, because now you'd be 5 years into that 10-year hold. And they're like, well, I didn't do that. Well, the second best time is right now.
Awesome. And how crypto and real estate can work together in an opportunity zone investment strategy?
We get this question a lot, and it actually is very doable. But the key thing is that you can't set up an opportunity zone business just to hold crypto. And so if you're just going to be mining, you can absolutely do that as an opportunity zone business. If you're mining, if you're creating some kind of physical location associated with it, that's the key. But if you're just literally just planning on, oh, well, I'm just going to set up a wallet and I'm going to buy crypto and then I'm going to trade crypto and stake it, and that's going to be my opportunity zone business, I think that you open yourself up to a substantial abuse claim from the IRS. And so the key thing is, right, the whole point of this program was to positively impact the zones by bringing people, investment, and energy to them. And so if you could show that you're doing that, so Green Data Center is an excellent example of how you could match the two and you could twine the two. So if you can put in solar or wind or some kind of renewable energy source that's providing power to your data center, and then you've got people there that are needing to work the data center and all of the energy that's associated with that, then I think that that's a very powerful tool. Now, and we've actually put together a structure where we can, and there's certain nuances that you got to do with inside of this, where you can, inside of a green data center that is actually mining, we can structure it so that you could probably get the, you could hold the crypto and then have that come out tax-free on the back end. But you got to get, there's nuances to how you have to structure that in order to make it work.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. That's a powerful concept. So would you share any best experiences in implementing Opportunity Zones?
Yeah, so my passion is helping people save money on taxes. And as part of that, right, so as we got this thing going, we started setting these things up, and we've had over 3,000 strategy calls. We've set up over 1,000 entities. And the biggest challenge for me was that, you know, when you're doing that kind of volume, was getting to know the people that we were helping and making sure that we're staying in touch with them and making sure that we're helping them so they don't have foot faults. And then I just love the energy, and I love the, you know, hearing about their story, hearing about the impact that they're having. And so as part of that, we created an ascent. It's called Ascent. And it's your journey up the tax savings mountains of Opportunity Zone. And we meet once a week, and it's from 10 to 11:30. And that solved that problem for me. And that's when really exciting for me is because I get to interact. We've got, I don't know, I think there's like 80 or 90 people inside of Ascent now. And I get all of these different perspectives and hear these stories that people are sharing through that process. And inside of that network, we've got there, it's got its own like login, and you can get all the videos, and people can post their deals and they could talk back and forth to each other. And so it's become a virtual co-working center for all things Opportunity Zone. And it's almost like a mastermind / think tank. And that's what has been really exciting for me, because I love people. I love interacting with them. I love their stories, and I love helping them. And this has been an opportunity to be able to do exactly that. And so that's probably been the most exciting thing for me.
Awesome. Would you also share any challenging experience in implementing Opportunity Zones?
Yeah. So we actually had a client that we set up and we got going, and we've got this Ascent program as part of our package that they could come in. But if they don't come in and participate and they don't ask us questions, then we don't know what they've done. And so they didn't move money from their QOF to their QOZB in time. And it ended up in a six-figure fine and a six-figure penalty because they literally just didn't move the money from one account to the other in a timely manner. And so that was really painful. And so as a result, we've also now implemented where people can sign up for our compliance program, where we are actually calling them, we're setting up meetings with them, we're jumping into their QuickBooks, and we're helping them to actually do the compliance. And we've seen a massive interest in that recently, where people are like, yeah, listen, hey, I want you to help me set it up, and I want you to help walk alongside me the whole way. And I want you to actually jump into my stuff to make sure that we're doing this correctly. And that has avoided that kind of problem. But that's the risks associated with Opportunity Zones, is that there's significant tax savings if you do this right. There's also significant tax penalties if you do this wrong. And so you got to be very careful and make sure that you're surrounding yourself with people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, good example. Thank you. So how do you see Opportunity Zones next 2 to 5 years?
So a lot of that's going to depend on what happens with the legislation. And I'm really confident that we're going to get something passed. I'm not sure if it's going to happen in its current form or what the likelihood of us getting it through as a tax extender for this year, namely because we averted the government shutdown. And so it'll be very interesting to see if legislation's able to come through along those lines. But at the very least, even if it doesn't, I think that during the presidential election, we will definitely see some kind of legislation come through to extend it if it hasn't happened prior to that. And so when that happens, that's going to generate an even more outpouring of interest inside of opportunity zones. And if they turn the corner and they make a couple of tweaks to the program, and they're playing with this right now with the CRA, the requirements that the banks do a certain amount of lending into lower income areas. And if that comes through, then we could see a massive spike in the interest inside of opportunity zones, namely because people are seeing that this program works. And so I think that it's, if anything, it's just going to kind of continue to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Let's switch towards personal side.
So yeah.
Any habits that are helping you to be successful?
So I think that the biggest habit that, and I think that this goes more into joy. And then I think that out of joy springs happiness and success, is that I keep a gratitude journal. And so the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I write down three things that I'm grateful for. And it's amazing what that does, right? And it's scientifically proven to give yourself endorphin hits and also the dopamine running through the brain. And I also now have a track record. So like if I'm ever down or if I'm like, man, that was a butt kicker of a day, I can go back through that journal and I'm just like, holy cow, look at that. And so I'm a huge proponent of gratitude and being thankful for, we live in the greatest country of all time. And we are in one of the greatest economic booms inside of the greatest country of all time. And so we have so little to complain about, but we do incessantly, namely because we're so focused on accomplishing the next thing that I think a lot of times we're not grateful for what we've already done and for what we have. And so I think that that in and of itself has allowed me to be able to step into more success, because it's like, hey, it's great if it comes. But I think the other piece of that is that we've also set a finish line, a financial finish line, and we give anything above that amount. And so that's a great way to be really content and to pursue success for the right reasons and success for being able to utilize that success in order to help others. And that's what I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, that's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. So any one personal learning that played major impact on your life?
I would have to say Air Force Academy. So I went to the United States Air Force Academy and I went through the fourth class system, and it was the toughest thing that I've ever done. But it also showed me what I was capable of. And everything from then has been just like, hey, there's nothing that is going to compare to that. And so I'm very grateful for that experience. And I'm grateful for the men and women who have served in our military in order to be able to make this the greatest country that has ever been on the planet.
Awesome. Thank you. And any books that impacted your life?
It's funny, is it? It's kind of weird that this would have, well, first the Bible, right? That's the one that's done the most. But I think the second one following that would be Traction by Gino Wickman. And introducing me to the entrepreneurial operating system, it has made a huge difference in just how we execute stuff. I'm a huge like idea guy and shiny balls. And this has allowed us to be able to take those ideas and to harness them, but to not get distracted to where we're going. And so I give Traction and the EOS process a lot of credit for that.
Awesome. Thank you. And how can listeners can connect with you, Ashley?
Well, I'm glad you asked. If they go to OZPro, so www.ozpros.com/Rama. And I'm pronouncing that correctly, right?
Yeah.
Right. So RAMA. And we've got a special discount on there. You can download the cheat sheet there. You can learn about OZPros. You can learn about Opportunity Zones. You can sign up for our webinar. You can set a strategy call with myself or somebody on our team, and we'd love to help you start your Opportunity Zone journey. And so we've got some specials on there, and we're really excited about your listeners joining us as we Sherpa them up Mount OZ.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Ashley. I really appreciate, and it's a complete great opportunity for an investor who want to invest in Opportunity Zones. Absolutely. And also they can create social impact.
It's the trifecta.
Yeah.
Right? Do good, make money, do well. So yeah. I love it. And so yeah. Thanks for having me on today. It's been a pleasure talking with you and looking forward to.
That's the end of this episode of Multifamily AP 360, but we'd love to continue to help you on your journey. Head to ushacapital.com/podcast to join our email list for more tips and strategies. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. This is Multifamily AP 360 with Ramakrishna Chunchu. We'll see you next time.